Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show, and we welcome your thoughts and comments. We'll be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and most other podcast apps, and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. This is our show for March 28th, 2021. Thanks for tuning in. And happy Passover for those who celebrate. It's a gorgeous day here in Northeast Ohio. I'm seeing lots of green on the trees and spring flowers everywhere. It's a beautiful time of year. This week's show features two amazing women with two completely different stories. I do want to take a moment first to mention a couple of things about last week's show. First, the county in Washington is King County, not Kings County. It was brought to my attention by a listener. I stand corrected. Second, after the conversation with Paul Tomei from the Cascade Bicycle Club and Ethan Campbell about the issue in King County, Washington, mainly about mandatory helmet laws, I posted two questions on our Facebook page. And wow, did I get a lot of great responses. The questions were, do you think mandatory helmet laws are necessary? And do you always wear a helmet when you ride? Overwhelmingly, the answer to the first question was no. And for the most part, everyone does wear a helmet most of the time. The answers were not the least bit surprising. And in fact, they were exactly as I suspected. But it's nice to have your own thoughts and ideas validated. And it's also great to see such engagement from listeners and readers. So let's meet our guests this week. Actually, you've met them before. They've both been guests on past shows. In July of 2017, I spoke with Sarah Dykman. She has a degree in wildlife biology, and at that time, she was embarking on a 10,000-plus mile journey to follow the migration of the monarch butterflies on her bicycle. Starting in Mexico, bicycling up to Canada, and then to the east coast of the U.S., she made the return trip to Mexico to complete a full migration cycle, 10,201 miles to be exact. Today, Sarah's joining me to talk about that trip and about her new book, Bicycling with Butterflies. Then we check in with Celine Yeager. Bicycling Magazine calls her the fit chick, and so do a lot of others. But she's gone really far beyond that title with a podcast, a multitude of articles, and several books. I wanted to talk to her about an article she wrote last summer about e-bikes, but the conversation turned into so much more. So I caught up with Sarah Dykman, where she alighted in Northern California for a bit. In addition to writing her book, Bicycling with Butterflies, she's begun a series of virtual chats about her trip and the book, and is also thinking about her next adventure. Sarah has a degree in wildlife biology, and what I find so intriguing about her is her incredible commitment to the natural world and the way in which she not only engages with it, but how she shares that engagement with everyone she meets. Hi, Sarah. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for being my guest this week. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to be back.
Really, really. You know, it's been 4 years almost. Well, 3.5 years. Since we spoke.
It doesn't feel that long, but yep.
I'll bet it doesn't. So it was July of 2017, and you were just embarking on what ended up being a 10,200-mile journey to follow the migration of the monarch butterflies by bicycle. And I just thought that was one of the coolest trips I could ever imagine. And now you have a book about it, Bicycling with Butterflies.
I do. The adventure continues.
The same adventure or just more adventures?
Just more, you know, the monarchs kind of guided my bicycle trip, and then they kind of guided this whole adventure and learning what it's like to write a book and publish a book. And now I'm doing virtual events. And so it's just keeps coming. I keep learning, and the Monarchs keep leading the way.
They're pretty awesome. As a matter of fact, we are just about ready to plant our big milkweed meadow out in front of the house this year. So I'm pretty excited about that. I hope we can attract some.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. That's the beautiful part is I on my trip, I saw monarchs in the strangest of places. And if there's a little bit of habitat, they find it. It's just so beautiful.
Oh, that's good to know. So let's talk a little bit about that trip. So you were leaving the Northeast, as I remember, in the United States and heading to Mexico. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. So my trip was a loop. I started in Michoacan, Mexico, which is in south central Mexico. And I basically went straight north to Ontario. My route kind of looked like a capital P. So from Ontario, I kind of did a big loop to the East Coast and then headed back to the Midwest and then straight south back to Mexico.
So it ended up being, according to this, 10,201 miles. That's a lot of miles on a bicycle. A lot of miles.
It is. I stretched it out, though. So it's about 50 or 60 miles a day. And that's actually a pretty doable when you have all day to do it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So did you see monarchs every single day?
I saw monarchs almost every day. There were times when the weather's bad, monarchs don't fly. And then if there's no habitat, there's no monarchs. So there were places that were either lots and lots of farm fields with no roadside habitat or any habitat between the rows of crops or on cold days.
I guess that begs the question, so you had a route you needed to take. They apparently took a different route?
Well, the beautiful thing about the monarchs is they pretty much by the time they hit Texas in the spring, they're spreading out. And they are pretty much any place where there's habitat from the Rocky Mountains to the East Coast. And as long as I was in Texas in the spring, I was on the route of the monarch. Of course, the monarchs and the roads don't go exactly the same place. And so sometimes they just, our paths wouldn't cross. That's not to say that a monarch didn't cross that path the day before, the day after. For me, what was most important that I was on the route of the monarch was not actually seeing monarchs, but about seeing people that could help the monarch. And I think a really important part of my trip was that literally every single person that I saw on my bike can help the monarch. And I saw people every day. So that was the most important part.
Well, that's an interesting point, one that I didn't really pick up on until now. So truth be told, I just got the book, so I haven't gotten through the whole thing. And it's beautiful. I want people to know. You know what? Let's take a moment and reintroduce you. We're speaking with Sarah Dykeman. She's written a book called Bicycling with Butterflies. If you heard my conversation back in July of 2017, you know that she went on this 10,000-mile journey on a bicycle following the migration of the butterflies all around sort of the northern hemisphere, I guess, down into Mexico, up into Canada. So what can people do? What kinds of things were you telling people they could do to assist in the migration?
The most obvious and probably easiest thing you can do is go outside and look around, and anywhere that you see a little plot of land that is currently maybe occupied by grass is to plant some native plants. And those can be native nectar plants, which the adults need to fuel up for their migration, or milkweed. And milkweed is a type of plant that is the only plant monarch caterpillars eat. And it's actually the plant that gives the monarchs their toxic protection. And it's a really beautiful plant. My favorite species is actually called common milkweed, which is a boring name for a really beautiful, spectacular plant. And I saw it all along the roads on my trip, and it's pretty easy to grow. And the blooms are these just like fireworks of purple, and they smell just so amazing. I stopped for every blooming milkweed I saw.
Have a drink of water, smell some milkweed. Have a bar, smell some milkweed. So I wanted you to relate a couple of the experiences that you had along the way, as if the trip itself wasn't, you know, unique enough. But you did have some really interesting and colorful experiences. Tell us a couple of them.
When people ask me to tell a story, sort of different stories pop in my head every time. And you asking me that, the first story that popped in my head was actually in Texas. And maybe this is because I was just thinking about looking at milkweed on the side of the road, but I was just starting to see milkweed, and I was so excited. And I would throw my bike on down, and I'd run into the ditch, and I would crawl around on these ditches on the side of the road in Texas for hours, looking for eggs and caterpillars, and just enjoying the milkweed. And on one particular day, I look up, and there's a cop on the side of the road above me. And I'm like, ah. And he gets out of the car, and he's like, "Hey, what you doing?" And I'm like, "I'm looking for milkweed." And he is genuinely confused. And I try and like invite him down to check it out. And he's like, "No, but I just came because people were calling because they said a cyclist had crashed and needed help." So I got up and I said, "No, I'm fine. I'm just looking, you know," and he drove off, and that was that. But several people on my trip stopped thinking I had crashed. And I think it's just such a testament, one, that people are looking out for me, but two, like, people just drive by the side of the road and they totally forget that there's just all this amazing things happening, growing right on the side of the road. And as a cyclist, you really get to see those.
That is so true. I can remember when, I don't know, on a trip down towards Cincinnati, because that's where I grew up, and I don't remember why we were going, but along the highway, I wasn't driving. So I got to see somebody had planted wildflowers in the median, and it was spectacular. It's like, mm-hmm. Why don't they do this on every roadway? You know, so I totally get what you're saying.
And there are, in fact, just to go to that, there are, in fact, a bunch of efforts right now to make monarch corridors, either on the interstate corridor, like I-35 corridor. And also, I just saw that they're introducing some legislation to make roadside habitat for pollinators.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I think that's like a perfect place for cyclists to get involved, because cyclists enjoy the side of the road as probably more than anyone else I know.
That's true.
Pollinators.
That's true. So I have a question about how you actually got into this to begin with. I'm sure we had this conversation 4 years ago, but I think my listeners would find it interesting as to why you decided to embark on this just enormously long journey following the monarchs.
I have loved bike touring since I was a kid. I did my first bike tour when I was in high school, and it was 1,000 miles on the East Coast, and it changed my life. I just was amazed that I could get where I wanted to go with my own power, and that so many adventures would unfold without any planning at all. All you had to do is just be out there, and the adventure would come to you. And in college, I sort of, all my friends and I, our community was based around cycling, and we would do mini tours on every long weekend. And at the end of college, I actually went on a 15,000 mile our goal was to go to every state but Hawaii. And we did. And along the way, I knew we would get a little, like, not bored, but we needed something else to kind of keep us engaged in the world. And we decided to do presentations. And our first presentations were awful. Actually, the first, like, probably the first 20 presentations were awful. We'd never done anything like that. But we kind of got our groove in South Dakota, and just it changed our lives to reach out to kids and see just how fun it was to share our passion and excitement, and give kind of just inspire kids to think differently about what they want to do with their lives. So that led to me creating an organization I call Beyond a Book. And basically it's about getting kids to learn and be excited by going on adventures. And I don't mean necessarily thousands of mile bike rides, but an adventure where you like go to the park and you look for pollinators is equally as important and exciting. Those trips just led me, the Monarch was an obvious next adventure because they're already in classrooms and they're already great teachers. And so it kind of just happened. And I fell into the fact that Monarch people are very passionate, and they made the trip go to the next step of bigger than my other trips.
I want to take another moment to reintroduce you. We're speaking with Sarah Dykman, and we're talking about her book, Bicycling with Butterflies. It is the explanation of, or the unfolding of, her 10,201-mile journey following the Monarch migration. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Sarah some more. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
The Outspoken Cyclist is proud to have Bike Law as a trusted partner. If you find yourself in need of legal advice or assistance as it pertains to any cycling issue, log on to bikelaw.com. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks, and we're speaking with Sarah Dykeman. We spoke with her back in July of 2017. That doesn't seem possible, as she was embarking on this long trip following the monarch butterflies' migration. Well, she completed that trip, and she wrote a book, Bicycling with Butterflies, and we're talking about that and a lot of the other things she's doing. So we didn't actually mention this, but I'd like to back up a little bit and tell me a little bit about your background that has, besides all these wonderful trips that you took in college with your friends, what is your college education and what are you doing to continue these kinds of interesting adventures?
I got a degree in wildlife biology, which basically gave me a ticket to take lots and lots of seasonal wildlife jobs where I mostly count tadpoles, and I've gotten to travel all over mostly the West, climbing mountains and looking for animals and exploring. And since the jobs are seasonal, it often is like you have to apply for a job, and if you don't have a job, well, you might as well go on an adventure of some sort. So it's worked out really well. I can work for a few summers, and then I can take a year off or so and go on a trip. And I'm always brainstorming trips, but my latest obsession right now is I'm trying to learn how to ride a horse because I want to ride a horse across Mexico.
I see. But why not, right?
You know, we'll see what happens. And I love frogs. Frogs aren't very good for following on migrations, but I'm brainstorming some sort of, I would like to do an amphibious trip that's half land, half water, studying amphibians, maybe in the somewhere. We'll see.
Aren't many frogs endangered and or going extinct?
Right. Frogs and also pollinators are indicator species, and they're sensitive to climate change, to pollution, to all sorts, a myriad of threats that our planet is facing. And so when we start seeing a decline in amphibians or pollinators, that's a good clue as to the health of our environment. And amphibians are declining globally. And yeah, it's certainly a wake-up call. They are trying to tell us to change and to fix things. And some of us are beginning to listen, which is good.
And that was my next question. Are you hopeful at all, given the new administration, the choices that he's making in some of his cabinet members, in his, I guess it's Interior Secretary and his Transportation Secretary? Does it give you any incentive to feel better about the way things are than the way they've been the last few years?
Yes. Yeah. It is always good on the news to hear people that are looking for change and recognize the challenges. And there isn't going to be an easy fix, but we need everyone talking about this, and people are talking about it, and more people are talking about it every day, and I do have hope.
That's good. I like hearing hope. Hope is a good thing. So I want to talk just a little bit more about the book. I want to get people interested in it. It's got some wonderful chapters, and it's got some wonderful stories. And one of the stories I read that I thought was interesting, although I'm not sure it was a good story, was sort of the encounter you had coming across the quote-unquote Peace Bridge. And I think it was coming from the U.S. into Canada. And
it was.
Okay, tell us that story, because I thought that was interesting.
Well, I got to the bridge, and I had a wonderful host who told me, you really need to come up with a plan. And I never come up with a plan. And I said, no, I will totally figure it out. There's plenty of options. Well, I get there, and it turns out there were no options. The The bridge didn't allow cyclists. There was a tunnel that didn't allow cyclists. The buses didn't allow cyclists. There was a barge that didn't allow cyclists. And my only option was this like a couple hundred mile detour, either north or south. And boy, I just got really frustrated. And it was just sort of infuriating that like cyclists were deemed unimportant. And they are building a new bridge, which is good. But I eventually ended up having to get a ride with my host. And I was fuming. I was angry. And I felt helpless. And, you know, you can bike 10,000 miles. But if the rules and the infrastructure aren't there for you, then you don't have an option. You can't do it. And it's so similar to the Monarch. You know, the Monarch is making this incredible migration. But if they don't have milkweed, if they don't have wildlands with native plants, then they just can't do it. And we need to be looking at people and at animals that can't write the rules, and we need to be protecting them.
So the new bridge that they're building, will it accommodate cyclists, or does somebody need to like rattle somebody's cage up there?
I believe it will accommodate cyclists. When I got upset and I called the Detroit mayor, I don't remember who they were, didn't return my phone calls. But I did, I think I got an email from a news, or I had an interview with a Detroit newspaper, and they were the one that told me a bridge was going to happen. So my other option, I think, was to wait like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a good option. That's not a great option.
I'm glad I didn't do that. I'm glad I just like allowed, you know, took the help that was given to me and made it across.
So I'd like to give my listeners an opportunity to find out more about you and your work and to get a copy of the book. Clearly, we can probably get copies of the book at all the places. You're going to be doing some virtual book tours. Yeah, I mean, you can't actually have people in a room. And I know you're doing one for Ohio. And when is that?
I have a virtual event hosted by the Friends of the Ottawa National Wildlife Refuge as part of their Seek Refuge Days on Sunday, April 25th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and we'll actually follow that up with a book club. You can join their Adopt a Monarch program, get a book, and join us on May 16th for the book club discussion.
Oh, that's going to be really, really cool. So is that going to be free of charge, or are you going to be charging for that?
The event is free. I believe to be part of the book club, you just need to join their Adopt a Monarch program, but that will get you a book.
Oh, even better. Even better.
Yeah, and it will be signed, and I've printed out some art prints, and they have some stickers and patches, and yeah, it'll be fun.
When you're saying a book club, it's the Ottawa group that has a book club. It's not you, personally.
Right. The Friends of the Ottawa National Wildlife Refuge are organized. They have an Adopt a Monarch program.
Okay.
And it will include a book. And then we're inviting everyone that's part of this program to to join me for a book discussion, book club sort of thing. It's going to be fun. I'm excited to talk about the book and answer questions that are deeper often than like, where did you go? Yeah. I get that question a lot, but I'm excited to get the deeper questions. Yeah.
Well, I guess people do want to know more. I think the people who listen to this show have an abiding interest in the environment, in nature, they ride a bike. You know, they're not always behind the wheel of a car, or they're hiking. Many of them are photographers. Many of them are, you know, outdoors people, climbers, hikers. So I think that this is really interesting. Are you still riding a lot? I guess I need to ask you about your bicycle.
I ride my bike. I don't go super far, and all the roads around me are dirt roads that are really hilly. So a 16-mile ride is actually like a pretty decent ride. But yeah, I love biking. It's kind of been nice to take a little bit of a break from the long distance biking, but I'm certainly excited to get out there and do longer trips again.
All right, I guess I have one more question about your bike. Did that bike hold up for you for this 10,200-mile trip well?
It did. I had a few small little things that needed to be solved, but I have an old steel mountain bike frame that's just a beast. It's hardy. It also looks ugly, so no one ever wants to steal it. And it's the only bike I own, and it's still the bike I use.
There you have it. I love hearing people just keep using those bikes, and especially now when you can't even really get a bike at a bike store. You know, there's such a shortage of equipment right now. Well, Sarah, this has been delightful, as our last conversation was. Once again, we've been speaking with Sarah Dykeman. She wrote Bicycling with Butterflies, My 10,201-Mile Journey Following the Monarch Migration. It's our follow-up conversation to when she actually started on her journey. If you are interested, tell them how they can get a copy of your book.
You can get a copy wherever books are sold.
Even better. Even better.
And it's everywhere.
And we absolutely recommend that people go to their local bookstores if they have them. I know everybody's online and the big A carries everything on the planet, but there are other bookstores. And you can get a copy, apparently, if you decide to log on for the Ottawa Book Club. Maybe we need that link, too. Do you have it?
I could get it to you. They're just putting it up now.
Okay. Well, we will put that on our Facebook page and on our blog, OutspokenCyclist.com. Sarah, thank you so much. I can't wait to hear what your next bicycle adventure is. And thank you for writing the book. It's lovely. I love the cover, as I said. And I'm really happy that you had a great, safe, and productive trip.
Well, I appreciate you letting me come on and talk about the Monarchs and my trip. So thanks again.
It's my pleasure. You take care.
Okay, you too.
All right.
Bye. Bye.
Sarah Dykeman's book, Bicycling with Butterflies, is available at all the usual places. But if you'd like a signed copy and information on the Ottawa National Wildlife Refuge Virtual Discussion and Book Club package, you can go to friendsofottawanwr.org/store. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll catch up with Fit Chick, Celine Yeager. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. Like my previous guest, Celine Yeager has a myriad of projects on the fire. She writes articles, is working on a follow-up book to Roar, which was her comprehensive physiology-based nutrition and training guide specifically designed for active women, and now offers up her podcast, Hit Play, Not Pause. She says it's a feisty menopause podcast for active, performance-minded women who aren't willing to put their best years behind them. Still considered the fit chick at Bicycling Magazine, I wanted to check in with her to specifically talk about e-bikes. But of course, that just ended up being a small part of our conversation. Hi, Celine. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. Wow, thanks for being my guest this week. It's been a while since we spoke.
Yeah, you know, not much has happened, right?
Since November of 2019. No, no.
No, nothing at all.
Just
nothing.
A year of insanity, right?
Yeah, it's great. It's great to be back. I'm happy that we're still here and doing our thing.
We are doing our thing. You're doing lots of things. In fact, you're doing some new things since the last time I spoke with you, but we're going to talk about all of that. And I came back to you because of an article you wrote in Bicycling Magazine. And then I look back and it's like, well, it's from last June, but these days that could have been yesterday. So
totally.
It's still relevant. So what has changed for you since COVID? I know you started a podcast. What else have you had to do to keep yourself from going stir crazy?
You know, I feel very, very fortunate that I live very, very, very close to mountain bike trails, running trails, stand-up paddleboarding waters. Like, you know, I mean, we had to be cloistered, my little family, you know, and I miss my parents and seeing, you know, being able to hug people for sure. That has been like the hardest part, just the casual gathering of people, which I love. But we have been able to be outside, and we had a beautiful summer. So we just took advantage of that and just really spent all of our time exploring our own state. And we found places to ride that I've never been that I was like, wow, this is amazing. So it was pretty cool, honestly, discovering our own backyard in ways that we really didn't appreciate before.
It's interesting you say that. Ohio has, I know you're in PA. Ohio, yeah. And PA is beautiful. I mean, there's so many cool things going on in Pennsylvania, from, you know, the Gap to the Ohio Pile and all of these different things. But Ohio has some really interesting things too that I think people found really exciting to do. They could just sort of roll out their door or roll down the street or whatever. And so from that perspective, it's been really good. I know you started a new podcast. Everybody's doing a podcast, but I looked at yours. I really thought it was interesting. Hit play, not pause. What a great name, number one. So tell me a little bit about it and why you decided to start a podcast.
Well, it's so interesting because, as you know, I had been co-hosting The Pace Line with Patrick for a couple of years. And I love the podcasting medium, and I really enjoyed learning it through him. And I'd always wanted to do it to do it, but I never started one because I had anything to do. Like, I mean, I could run my mouth all day. It just wasn't enough of an impetus to devote yourself. And if you're going to be successful, and if you're going to reach, and if you build an audience, you have to be, you know how it is, you have to be consistent. It's a job. So I never really did it. But then I got approached by Live Feisty, which is a women-owned media company out of Canada. We're doing this project on, they wanted to reach the menopausal athletic audience, who nobody is talking to. And they know that I'm working on a follow-up to the book Roar, which is the book that I co-authored with Dr. Stacey Sims on female-specific physiology and training. And we're doing one for the medical audience. And they knew that, so they're like, would you want to do a webinar with us, or, you know, whatever? And I said, you guys really need a podcast. And they said, do you want to do it? And I just said, yes. So, I mean, it was really that simple. But because I had, I had raced at a pretty high level all through my 40s. And honestly, there was a point at which I thought, maybe I'm going to miss this. Like, maybe this thing won't happen to me that I, it happens to every single woman. And somewhere around 48, 49, I was like, not missing it.
Here it comes.
And I was, and it can really, really rock you. Your body just takes this drastic change. And I always tell people, it's like, especially men, I said, imagine your testosterone going away over like 3 to 5 years. Like, what would that be like for you? And estrogen is anabolic, and it has all these metabolic processes that I never understood until I started working on this book. And like, of course, this is such a profound change. And when I started looking for advice outside of, the stuff that Stacey and I have been talking about in writing, which is a lot, there was nothing out there. Like, podcasts, nothing. Like, there's plenty for menopause. There's plenty for 40-plus women. But once you get to that space of women who are actually like racing bikes, still running ultras, doing all that stuff, doing CrossFit, the information drops off into nothing. So I thought it would be unconscionable of me, honestly, not to take my own experience, what I'm gaining writing this book, and all of the, because I have been a journalist in the health and fitness space for 30 years. And it made these amazing contacts, and I have access to them. And I thought I would be remiss if I didn't take this chance to bring this information, change the conversation, normalize the conversation. And the reception has been amazing.
Well, I can tell you that when you have the kind of background that you have, or that I have, 45 years in the bike business, and I hate to say you tend to owe it to the people, but you do in a way have to pay it back in some way. That I had the privilege of you know, all these clients and all of these suppliers and all of these opportunities and the ability to share it in this way. I mean, it's so personal, even though you're kind of talking through a medium called podcast, it is personal in a way.
It's personal. It's personal. The best ones are personal.
Right. So let me take another moment to reintroduce you, and then I want to talk to you about some of the other things you're working on. Sure. We're speaking with the Fit Chick. Do you still say that?
I do, because it's still the, you know, bicycling, it started as a column. I think I might have explained before. It was Ask the Fitness Chick, you know, like just because I was the general fitness person as opposed to like coach or the ranch, you know, I mean, we all have sort of personalities. And it just, I mean, people to this day, like I'll be somewhere, they're like, are you the Fit Chick? I'm like, some days, you know, so it's playful. I never thought I would still be that, but I still write for bicycling and I'm still the Fit Chick there. So, you know, it's just one of those sort of nicknames that just stuck. And it has kept me accountable for 25 years, I must say.
Well, there is that. Well, and she has a name. She has a name. Her name is Celine Yeager.
Yes.
But she's the Fit Chick to me. You know, that's how I think of you. I think it's awesome. So what else are you working on beside your podcast? I saw you have, as of, I think today I looked, you have 27 episodes. Congratulations. It's hard. It's hard. You know, I produce one every single week and people don't realize how much of a job a podcast
is. But
you
also produce it, which that is a mission. I mean, I feel very lucky because I just talk into a microphone. You know, I get my, like that, having to then produce it is exponentially in my mind because I'm not experienced with it.
Yeah, you get used to it.
Job.
But it is, but it's a job. It's a real job.
It's a job.
So, We mentioned Roar. What else? You have another new book on the horizon? You always have a new book on the horizon.
Well, Roar is the one with Stacey, and I'm writing the follow-up, and I literally am kind of working around the clock trying to get that out the door. The pandemic put a wrench into that work because Stacey is kind of stuck in New Zealand. When she moved there, they were hoping to come back to the States in 2020, and, well, that didn't happen. So the time zones and all of that, it made it much more difficult to collaborate and write this book. In some ways, the delay was helpful because she's also creating a Menopause for Athletes course, and that fed the book an awful lot. Like, so that informed a lot of what we were putting in the book. So despite getting, you know, waylaid by a couple of months or so, that it ended up being fortuitous for us, I think.
And when do you think that'll actually hit the stands?
This summer. I'm not exactly, they had to move the pub date. It was going to be April, but the manuscript is 90% done. And, you know, so we have to do photo shoots and all the stuff that goes into a book. This summer, for sure, it should be out.
We're going to take a real short break. And when we come back, I want to talk to Celine about an article she wrote and also about what she sees in the bike business, as that's what we talk about these days. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Celine Yeager. She is often known as the Fit Chick, and she is busier than me. She has a new podcast, Hit Play, Not Pause, for women who are in that stage of their lives. Fortunately, I'm past that stage of my life. Although, you know what? You really never are past it. You know, it's
100%.
Things just keep showing up. So I did want to talk about an article you wrote last summer, which it seems to me you would have just written it because we're still talking about it a lot. And a lot of people will say when you mention the word e-bikes, a lot of people are going to say, oh, no, I'll never buy one of those. Yeah, right. And they will probably. Mm-hmm. And you wrote an article titled 13 Reasons to Get Stoked About E-Bikes. Sales of electric bikes are soaring, and here's why everyone loves them, and you probably will too. So do you still see it trending? I do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's amazing how many people, and I live in a fairly small town, you know, 9,000, 10,000 people. It's got one bike shop. I can't believe people I see riding around on them, like people that you wouldn't quote unquote peg as cyclists, right? Like people who just have bought these bikes and they can't keep them in the shop. They are, yes, they are absolutely still trending.
Have you ridden one?
Oh, I love one. I have one.
That a girl.
I love it. I love, love, love it. I would definitely consider not having a car and having an e-cargo bike, because I live, like, I'm very accessible to everything, but I live kind of on top of a little hill in town. And there's legitimately sometimes where I am tired from, like, a race or training or just whatever, and I don't feel like schlepping a bike up the hill with stuff is a lot of work. It's just a lot of work. It's not joy. But when you're on an e-bike, I'm looking for excuses to go out. Like, oh, I'll go to the library. I'll go to the store. Sure, I'll go to the post office because it's just fun.
So do you use it to do those things?
Yep, I absolutely do.
So are you shopping with it?
I am shopping with it, unless I have like a ludicrous amount of stuff.
Right.
That's when I feel like I could use they have the cargo e-bikes, which would be amazing.
Right. What kind do you have?
I have a Karmic, which is just like an old, it's beautiful though. It's like fade pink and purple.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just like a standard older e-bike, towny kind of thing. It's got a bike rack. It's got a light, you know, built into it. And it's just, it really is just a joy. It's a pleasure. And it's not exercise. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, whatever. But I did some tests for bicycling where I wore a heart rate monitor and I did the same stuff on my cross bike and then I did it on the e-bike. And, you know, no question, if you're looking at the metrics of calories burned and yada yada, it is not comparable. That is true. But it is comparable to a brisk walk. It is exercise for sure. And it's way more exercise than sitting behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah, or not getting out at all.
Totally.
And I do know that people who maybe haven't ridden a bike in a long, long time and who were afraid to get on a bike are less afraid of an e-bike because they have, even if they don't use the pedal assist that much, it's there for them. It's like a psychological boost.
You know you can get home.
Exactly.
I've heard people actually say that, like they know that they'll be able to make it. And that's huge. And a lot of places, I mean, you know, I don't know where you are in Ohio, but a lot of places where we are, it's hilly.
Yeah, we're hilly on this side.
You know, we're not in the Alps or the Rockies, but it's not flat.
Right.
And it makes it hard.
Yeah, we're on the hilly side of Cleveland. So Cleveland's got an east and a west. And if you're on the west side, it's flat. And if you're on the east side, it's hilly. And we're on the east side.
Yeah.
It's hilly. I wanted to talk a little bit, and I'm sure you've delved into this, even though it may be a little bit off topic from what you're doing right now with your book.
Mm-hmm.
Equity and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It seems to be, I think it's equity, inclusion, and diversity are those, it's DEI or DIE, those three, you know, words. And e-bikes are a good solution for people who might not be able to afford a car.
Not quite yet, but hopefully soon.
Well, and that becomes question with some of the legislation that's going on right now, you know, at least introduction of some credits for e-bikes and that kind of thing. Do you see a leveling of that playing field at all?
I hope so. I'm encouraged by that kind of legislation. I'm encouraged because I also know the big players, the John Burkes in the world, the, you know, Signards, people at Trek and special, these big companies also have a vested interest in this, of making these bikes more affordable at the base price, because like anything, you know, the when they first came out, they were expensive. They still continue to be quite expensive. The thing that I think is good with an e-bike though is that it does not matter if the components are heavy, right? Like all that stuff doesn't matter. The stuff that ends up making a traditional bike expensive often is the lighter component and all that stuff to make it easier to ride up hills because it's not as heavy, right? But that doesn't matter when you're an e-bike. So I think that they can bring a lot of that stuff down and ultimately bring the prices down once the electric technology is also cheaper, the batteries and all that. And I think we're seeing that, and I think it's only going to get better. It's only going to get better. There's no question about that.
I would agree, which then brings me to the opposite end of the spectrum. And it's something I don't know if you've thought about. So Harley Davidson and Porsche, for example, have entered this market. And of course, they're starting at outrageous numbers. You could buy an inexpensive car for what some of these e-bikes are costing. I'm wondering if you've thought about or have wondered about why these two companies in particular, Harley, who will sell through their dealerships, and Porsche, who will also sell through their car dealerships, why they're getting into this business and whether or not they're going to actually stick with it. I know Harley's put a lot of R&D into their e-bikes.
Yeah, you know, a few years ago, I wrote a piece for Ford Motor Company for their newsletter because they were going into the e-bike territory. And I had the same questions, but I wasn't thinking outside of the U.S. I mean, the European market is enormous and much more open. Asian markets, like those markets are way ahead of us. So, yes, I mean, those will be status. They'll be selling other places eventually. Hopefully we catch up. But, you know, we tend to think very U.S. centric, and they are selling all those things outside of the U.S.
Of course. I mean, you know, I do think U.S. centric, even though I cover the whole world, right?
Yeah, of course. But I mean, but it did like that. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, that makes sense.
Sure, it does. So I want to talk to you about two more things. One is the lack of product, the lack of parts. And I don't know what you're hearing, if you are hearing anything, if you're plugged in anywhere. You know, we have our custom bike. My husband has his custom bike business and is struggling, really struggling to get parts. And I'm just wondering what you're hearing about the supply chain and whether, I mean, having this big ship stuck in the Suez Canal right now, it might actually have bike parts on it. I'm wondering, who knows, right? So I'm wondering if you've heard anything.
Well, you know, we buzz about it all the time internally at Bicycling, of course. You know, it's, and I hear from the bike shops. You know, some bike shops somehow have managed to get some stuff in, but like others, literally, they're telling people maybe in the fall. It's going to be a big problem. Like, there's no simple resolution for this problem. I don't have a crystal ball. I think it will be interesting to see as the world re-enters, you know, from this, how many people, we're not going to retain all these people that bought new bikes, right?
So,
yeah, but if we retain even 5% of them, we have a giant boom. You know, that's not going back in the bottle, but that's a long way of saying, I think you're going to see a lot of used product on the marketplace, and that'll be interesting to see. I don't know as far as, I need new chain rings for my gravel bike and I'm struggling.
Yep.
You know, it's going to be a cluster for another, for the rest of this year, for sure. And into 2022.
Yeah. Cranks and shifters and derailleurs are just a big, and brakes, you know, I mean, there are a couple of American manufacturers, they've put on extra shifts, but they're working 24/7 and not being able to keep up. So I agree with you. Once things get back to normal, will we retain a percentage of these new riders?
A percentage for sure, but definitely not all.
Yeah. All right. Last thing I want to talk about is once again, your podcast and what you're up to. After this book is published, what's next for you? That's number one.
After this book is published, what's next? I'm talking to a woman about who wants a book of her own written that I've worked with a long time. I'm not able to sort of reveal that.
That's okay.
But, you know, we do a lot with, I'm doing an awful lot with Liv Feisty, the producers of Menopause. We have a membership, Feisty Menopause membership, and I'm very actively involved in that. And that's just really a deeper dive into the issues that we cover on the podcast, and, you know, creating some content for the parent company, which is really, really enjoyable. And my usual bunting work, and then maybe some events this year, you know, which is also pretty exciting to go back to events.
There is that, events.
Yeah.
And a few of them are coming back online. I know I talked with somebody recently who's actually going to be able to get some of her tours going.
Yep.
She's very hopeful to be able to do her East Coast Greenway tour from Maine to Florida.
Nice.
I know, right?
Yeah.
You actually have a new website, I noticed.
Which one?
Well, when I went to look for you, it is CelineJaeger.contently.com.
That's where I put all of my writing and my books, because it's so much easier than managing your own website. Like, there's CelineJaeger.com. I still have it. I do sinfully little with it because it's people just don't go to people's websites like that. It's just a different world now because everyone's on social media channels, right? So I'm very active at my FitChick3 Instagram and my Celine Yeager FitChick Facebook. I mean, that's where I put my work and my thoughts and my ride pictures and all of that. Those are the funnels through which most people find my work, right? If I need to send someone who wants to hire me to write something to find my work, I sent them to the content. Like, it's a very easy way to put your work up.
Well, looking at this, CelineYeager.contently.com, as I scrolled down, I saw my favorite mat, Jade. I just had a big order come in, and I'm like, oh, Jade Yoga, that's my mat. And nice. It's so interesting. I changed mats for the first time in a couple of years, and I'm like, oh, my that's God, the difference. You know?
Really?
Oh.
Give me a quick tutorial on that, because I've had the same terrible mat forever.
I'm telling you, that I've been using Jade mats for probably 12 years, and I always forget. I look at it, and I go, you know what? It's time. So I placed an order, a student's order. I got mine in. I unrolled it. I put it on the floor, and I'm like, oh, my God. First of all, it's sticky again. It doesn't slide.
That's a big deal.
It is a huge deal, and I'm so happy. And it's a new color, too. They have a new color called Jade Green, and it's really pretty. So, yeah. All right. So they can find you, all your writing at CelineYeager.contently.com. Mm-hmm. And the podcast, that's really important. I take it you're on all the podcast apps.
Everywhere. Hit play, not pause. It's on all the podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, SoundCloud, you know, wherever you get your podcasts, we're there.
Right. Well, it's been wonderful talking with you again. I love catching up. And maybe someday we'll actually get to be in the same place at the same time.
That'd be great.
It would be great. We've been speaking with Celine Yeager, and you can find her at Hit Play, Not Pause is her podcast, and CelineYeager.contently.com. Thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Talk to you again. Celine Yeager's podcast, Hit Play, Not Pause, can be found on all your favorite podcast platforms, and we'll be watching for her sequel to the book Roar. My thanks to Celine and to Sarah Dykeman for joining me on the show this week. And my thanks to you for listening. Please remember to subscribe to the show and give it a rating on your favorite podcast app. Write a review if you feel like it too. You can join the ongoing conversations on our Facebook page or leave a comment about this show or anything else that's on your mind on our blog, OutspokenCyclist.com. I hope you have a great week. Enjoy the beautiful spring weather. Stay safe. Stay well. And of course, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show, and we welcome your thoughts and comments. We'll be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and most other podcast apps and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.